Well, good afternoon and welcome to Visions in Sound. My name is Rob Daniels. The Cylons were created by man. They evolved. They rebelled. There are many copies, and they have a plan. Well, unless you've been under a rock for the past 3 years, you know something about the new Battlestar Galactica. This series took the concept of the original 1978 series and turned it on its ear. There were many naysayers in the beginning, but those that doubted the series would last through the first season had their comeuppance, we'll say. 3 seasons later, and a fourth coming in April, yes, you heard me right, April 2008, pending the writer's strike, of course, and a TV movie coming this weekend on Space, or if you're in the States, Sci-Fi Channel, the series is not letting up. Now, in charge of the music for the series is a composer who has taken the music in great new places. Bear McCreary has taken the concepts started by Richard Gibbs and expanded on them. I had the great opportunity to speak to Bear from where he sort of started back in season one, and you'll hear from him today. The season 3 CD was just released recently, and you'll get a chance to hear some of that music today. But here is part one of the interview I did with Bear.
Well, when we last spoke, you had just finished season 2, and we're heading into season 3. Now, I was listening to the season 1 disc, and I noticed that the music for season 3 has a much bigger sound to it. How do you achieve this sound, and how do you make it big without getting lost in the mix?
You know, the music has been constantly evolving over the course of these past seasons. One of the ways that it's gotten bigger is we've just had more practice at doing this kind of music. And, you know, the music budget's gotten a little bit bigger, but, you know, our orchestra size has gotten a little bigger. But for the most part, it's just been a matter of me and my music team just having more practice writing this unusual kind of music. And ultimately, also, the fact that the producers let the music evolve and let the music change means that it's been continually growing and changing over the course of these 3 seasons, where normally in TV, I think the idea is the music doesn't change.
Okay, and how do you keep it big without it getting lost in the sound effects and that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, parts of it do get lost in the sound effects. I mean, that's just one of the caveats of doing film and TV music. So for me, you know, I just produce the music as well as I can and hope that even a small percentage of it pops through the mix. Because ultimately, you're not supposed to hear it in the show. You're not supposed to notice it. So for me, I always make sure that it sounds great on the record, and as I'm writing it for each episode, I make it as well produced and good as I can. But ultimately, whether or not it comes through is something that I can't spend my time thinking about. For example, there was a cue on there called Mandala in the Clouds, which was this action sequence from an episode called Maelstrom. And as I wrote that, I knew that it would get obliterated in the mix. I just knew it. But it was such an important episode and such a cool scene, I thought, I'm going to write a really good cue anyway and hope that some of it pops through. And I was correct. I mean, you know, it's really hard to hear that cue in the episode. I don't want to say impossible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you strip away all the sound effects and listen to it on the record, there's still a really good piece of music in there. So that's just kind of the way I work on that show.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, speaking of good music, going back to season 2 for a bit, I have to talk about the cue Prelude to War, which has to be one of the greatest cues composed for TV in the last decade. What was the genesis for this cue?
That was started in an episode called Pegasus, and Michael Reimer, the director of that, wanted to up the ante a little bit and bring in an orchestral element, even though he was the person who directed the miniseries, and it was sort of his idea to avoid orchestra at all costs. And that ended up being the first of a trilogy of episodes. That story arc continued for 2 more shows. Once I had sort of raised the bar to that level for Pegasus, I had to bring the orchestra back to finish out the trilogy of episodes. The 3 big cues from that, from each of those 3 episodes, were edited together to create Prelude to War. Which, you know, to me, I always think of those 3 episodes basically as a 90-minute movie or 3-hour movie, I guess. Anyway, so they fit together really well.
So now I have noticed that even though the music is in for Battlestar Galactica is in that style, it's also clearly rooted in the classical style as well. What influenced your decision to do that?
It's hard to say. I mean, part of it is just the fact that that's where my training is, mm-hmm. and I can't, you know, totally throw out everything I've ever been taught. But I think another part of that is that Western classical music is another part of the music of Planet Earth, and I was trying to represent as much of that as I could in the score. I wanted to have as many cultures and musical styles represented. So that's why, in addition to Middle Eastern soloists and Japanese taikos and Chinese flutes and Indian sitars and Native American drums and African drums, Celtic bagpipes, you also get Western classical music, some Gregorian chant, mm-hmm. And heavy metal.
Well, it's a really cool style, and it really works within the context of the show.
Well, thank you. The challenge has been to unify all those things, you know? I mean, even as I list them off to you, I'm thinking to myself, how can that possibly all work together? You know, I think it works pretty well, and it's created a unique tone for the show.
Now obviously, and you mentioned the combination of cues for Prelude to War. Obviously, the cues that appear on CD are not in the same form that they are in the show. When you present your cues to the music editor or to the producer, what form are they in?
We deliver everything on hard disk, and the music editor loads it into the show, and the producers never hear the music out of context. They don't ever put it on in their car and listen to it and, you know, try to get the mood. All they care about is what it sounds like in context with the show. So, of course, that means there's a lot of musical detail that they'll probably never even hear just because they don't ever hear it outside of the dialogue and the sound effects. But that's fine. I mean, they're not music critics. They're producing a show, mm-hmm. you know. So if it works in the context of the show, then it works for them.
So now I'm just curious as to when the decision was made to take the Wander My Friends theme from season one and turn it into sort of the theme for Bill and Lee Adama.
Well, it was made in the episode that I wrote it for in mm-hmm. season one. There was a scene before the big moment where Wander My Friends, the song, appears, where Bill and Lee are having this very personal, heartfelt conversation about Lee's grandfather's lighter, and Bill gives it to him as sort of a good luck charm. And I used the theme there, and there it was clearly meant to symbolize their relationship, which had been on the rocks, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ever know that it would come back. I suspected that it would come back. But the reality is that as the show evolves, there's really very few scenes that are genuinely uplifting and happy. So that became one of those rare cues that the editors could draw from and use in their temp scores. So it did end up returning on multiple occasions, most notably in season two and then once again in season three. And I can tell you already it'll be back again in season four. So it's become one of the most recurring themes, even though I suspect that it was among the more controversial among viewers. Even as I wrote it, I was like, this is a little outside the box for this show. Mm-hmm. But, of course, ultimately, as that character relationship developed, you realize it's not. I mean, this is really an aspect of the show. It's not all dark, you know, gritty and depressing. And there are genuine moments where you want to show warmth and compassion between two characters. And that style of music and that theme, I felt, really communicated that immediately.
Now, heading into season three, what was your goal for the music, and how did that work with the producer's vision and your vision?
I try not to have goals going into each season, partly because I don't ever know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. and you never know what direction they're going to go. For season three, I had made the conscious decision last summer that I wanted the score to be more genuinely Asian. I felt like a lot of the taiko drum writing that I had done in season one and two wasn't really taiko drum writing. It was just Western military percussion music that happened to use taikos. Mm-hmm. I think an obvious exception would have been The Thousandth Landing from season one. That had an interesting feel to it. But I really felt like there was an element missing, and I really did a lot of homework on Japanese taiko music and traditional Japanese music, melodic music, and was hoping there would be an opportunity to bring that character to the show. And of course, the escape from New Caprica, that entire episode was one big action cue, and that ended up being the cue called Storming New Caprica, which I think definitely has a different sound than anything in season one and season two. There's this frenetic energy in the drums that just isn't there. In Prelude to War is a perfect example, which is a very Western kind of ordered military feel. And Storming New Caprica is just, you know, more chaotic, but controlled. So I don't know, that was something that I had made the decision early to do, and luckily there was a place in the season to do it. I mean, obviously I didn't plan on bringing any heavy metal back into the show, and then when Ron Moore said he wanted me to do Along the Watchtower, then the opportunity presented itself.
Right. Now, you mentioned the cue Storming New Caprica, and it's an amazing cue, and it uses an array of instruments, and you mentioned bagpipes earlier, which it makes it sound like it almost deserves to be in a Highlander film or something like that. What was the influence on this decision?
Well, it's interesting, actually. As I mentioned before, that cue, I was trying to make it as Asian as I possibly could by really listening carefully to the way that taiko drum ensembles play their rhythms and tried to emulate that. I also, you know, you'll hear a lot of Chinese flutes in there, but also the reality is that this is Bill and Lee coming to the rescue. And I happened to have my bagpipe player on the session because he had to play the cue called Admiral and Commander. So I thought, well, as long as I got this guy here, let's put him on the action cue. And it kind of made sense to me that because, you know, the two Adamas are coming in to rescue everybody, that the Celtic instruments, which represent their relationship, would be involved in the battle scene. And in fact, this had happened before. If you look at season one track called Battle on the Asteroid, it's a very similar orchestration where it's a lot of drums, a lot of Middle Eastern instruments, but then also in the background, just tucked in the ensemble, there's a whole arsenal of bagpipes.
Now, the thing about Storming New Caprica, when the bagpipes come in, they just kind of emerge out of the mix. Is that a conscious decision, or was it just something that sort of happened as you were recording?
Well, probably what happened is that's probably a visual cue for the show. I saved the bagpipes for very key moments. The first time you hear them is when the Galactica jumps into the atmosphere and is descending and dropping Vipers out, you know, through the fire, and it's a very dramatic moment. And that was the first place that I really used the bagpipes. And then from that point on, now that the Galactica was actively involved in the battle, you'll hear hints of the bagpipes sort of throughout the rest of the cue. And then the other place where I really wanted to feature them prominently was the destruction of the Pegasus, which to me was Lee sacrificing not only the ship, but his command in order to save his father and to save everybody. Right. So that to me felt like a really appropriate place to have the bagpipes sneak in. And again, I didn't make the cue a sad piece of music because it was this very exciting, energetic, scary action cue. But by adding the lone bagpipe to it, I felt like it did add a subtle emotional quality that maybe even though the audience is scared and psyched and excited about this scene, that a part of them might be sad to see this ship go.
And we'll have a little bit more of the interview that I did with Bear McCreary in just a bit. But first, I want to play a little bit of the music that kind of got us to season three. You'll hear a little bit of music from the Battlestar Galactica miniseries, season one and season two. So I'll be back in just a little bit. Here's some music from the miniseries written by Bear McCreary.
Thank you.
now, a little bit of music from season one.
Yeah. Shulinam Mayon's live when you mark the door.
And before we switch to the music of Season 2, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Here's some music from Season 3. What else could I play? Season 2. What else could I play rather than Prelude to War?
receive messages from their spaceships. Contact with us by radio. Contact with us by radio. Well, since they first tried contact with us by radio, we've developed a language computer.
CKMS 100.3 FM.
5 years I've waited for this experience.
And with some music from Season 2 of Battlestar Galactica with music by Bear McCreary. Well, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000 at hotmail.com. Well, because this is such a jam-packed show, I'm just going to quickly get to the music of Season 3. Sit back and enjoy some great music, and I'll be back with another part of the interview that I did with Bear McCreary. Back in a bit. And we'll get to a little bit more of the season three music from Bear McCreary's Battlestar Galactica's CD in just a bit. But if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Well, welcome back to Visions and Sound as we're looking at the music of Bear McCreary. Now, in the midst of scoring BSG, Bear has also been able to work on other projects, including like Rest Stop, Wrong Way 2, and the TV show Eureka. Now, we discuss a little bit of this in the next portion of the interview.
All right. Now, you have not only been busy on Battlestar Galactica, you've also been working on other projects, including like Rest Stop, Eureka, and Wrong Turn 2. Where do you find the time?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's been a very busy year. I've been very fortunate. It's been a very, very busy year. I'm also doing the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which premieres in January. So it's been a very busy year.
Mm-hmm. So how did you become involved with Rest Stop?
Rest Stop was interesting. The timing came about right as I just finished season two, and I hadn't started season three yet, and I was approached to do this horror movie that was directed by John Shyvan, who works on Supernatural and also worked on X-Files. So I really wanted to work with him on this project, just because of the things that he had done, and the timing was perfect. It was right on my what little time off I had between season two and season three.
Mm-hmm.
I also was really glad I took the project on because John let me have total creative freedom. I mean, I came at him with some pretty weird ideas. I wanted to score the entire film basically with a banjo and a fiddle representing the villain and an alto flute representing the heroine. And it's not the typical horror movie approach, where you're supposed to take the movie and plaster it with a bunch of atonal orchestral screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to create something melodic. I mean, my goal was to create a score that sounded like it came out of a horror movie in the 70s, which was before the music became that, horror music became really that chaotic. We even, did the old tried and true trick where we turned the main character's theme into a pop song, which used to happen all the time.
Right.
I mean, but you just don't hear it happening that much anymore. And I also got to write a couple other songs, including a demented, evil, satanic gospel song. So, I just had a blast. And John let me do basically whatever I wanted. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was really like being a kid in a candy store, getting to explore a lot of these instruments that I certainly don't get to do on Battlestar.
Right. So do you look at something as a project like Rest Stop as kind of like a... I'll use the word rest stop from Battlestar Galactica.
I do. I mean, I look at it as a way to explore different kinds of drama. And with any other project I take on, I mean, I'm not really looking for projects that pay a lot of money. I mean, it'd be it's great when they do, but I'm really looking for projects that I'm passionate about and also that let me do something different. It's the main reason I took on Sci-Fi Channel's Eureka,
mm-hmm.
which is about as night and day different from Battlestar as you can possibly get. And then, ultimately at the end of the day, I can put together a really good record. Like, for example, the Rest Stop album with all the different really truly melodic cues and the songs. Like, I'm really proud of that record,
mm-hmm.
And I hope it's one that people slowly discover over time, I mean, because it's a good record, and it's a fun movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I recall correctly, is there going to be a Rest Stop 2?
There is, actually.
Are you going to be involved with that?
We don't know yet. I actually, I've been going back and forth with the director. We're trying to get our schedules to work out, and originally it didn't look like my schedule would be open, but there is a possibility now with the writer's strike has really affected everybody's schedules out here
mm-hmm.
in Hollywood. So now it's suddenly, might not be as booked as I thought I was.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, I would love to be able to come back because from what John's told me about the film, a lot of the characters return, and it would just be great to be able to do something where I could bring back those character themes and take them to new heights and write a new satanic gospel song.
Mm-hmm. So now musically, what frightens you?
What frightens me?
Yes.
I think what frightens me, boy, that is a good question. What frightens me is dissonance. But if it's controlled, for example, if you're listening to a horror film score that's nothing but screeching and wailing and crazy 20th century technique effects, and you get, after about 3 or 4 minutes, you're just going to zone it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But to me, having a musical texture that seduces you into listening, and then these moments come up that are very dissonant. That's what I think. That's what really scares me, and that's what I've noticed, that especially in horror films. The guys whose work I admire the most. I mean, look at Jerry Goldsmith's scores for The Omen and Poltergeist,
mm-hmm.
which to me are among the best horror scores, if not the best horror scores ever written. And I think the same can even be said for John Carpenter's Halloween. You know, these are scores that have really accessible themes. They're beautiful, you know. They're not, that theme itself isn't necessarily terrifying, but so the melodic theme seduces you into, you know, giving yourself over to the music, and then when the composer wants to scare you, then they've got you.
Mm-hmm. So now, going back to Battlestar Galactica for just a second, one of your songs in Rest Stop was actually used in an episode of Battlestar Galactica. How did that
mm-hmm.
happen?
Well, that happened quite simply and organically. I had about 4 days to score that episode of Battlestar Galactica, and I didn't want to have to write a song in that time period. I had sent a bunch of songs to Edward James Olmos, because he directed that episode. This is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the set filming the scenes in the bar, and he called me, and he said, hey, I need some songs for the bar, and he had a whole bunch of really interesting ideas about the music, but it was such short notice that I was like, all right, I'm going to throw together some stuff, and I put together a couple of songs from Rest Stop, a couple of songs from an album by a singer named Rhea Yarbrough, who mm-hmm. sings on Battlestar a lot, and a couple other things. And I just sent them to him so he could have them on the set. And then when we got to the editing room, he had actually already cut in the songs that he liked. And the three songs he liked were a song called Lord Knows I Would by Rhea Yarbrough, an original electronica piece of mine. The one that was featured by far the most prominently was the song from Rest Stop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I was like, well, okay, it's all yours.
All right, so now getting back to your other projects, what made you decide to become involved in Wrong Turn 2?
Wrong Turn 2, my decision to get involved was when I saw the movie. It was, again, it was something different. It was not something I had done before. This movie has a perverted sense of humor. I mean, as I watched it with the director the first time, I mean, he's in the room. I'm in the edit bay with the editor and the director. And I want to, like, laugh and cheer. And, like, I'm kind of holding myself back because I'm like, I don't, maybe these guys are, like, really serious. I don't want to offend them. And then finally, when the movie ends, it's so over the top and ridiculous. I turned to them and I said, you guys have really serious mental problems to be able to make this movie. And then they just laughed, and they're like, thank you, you get it. And I was relieved, because I, you know, and as I talked to them more, I realized that, you know, the director, Joe Lynch, and I were totally on the same page with the horror movies that we loved, and especially the 80s horror films that we grew up on. I mean, the Wrong Turn 2 is, you know, two parts Evil Dead and one part Predator. So it's like all these movies that I loved, I could see all these homages. And then I pitched to Joe this idea that story is about mutant cannibal hillbillies. So I wanted to make mutant cannibal hillbilly music. So kind of drawing from my, you know, experience on Rest Stop, we brought in banjos and fiddle and accordion and jugs and washboard. And I used a bluegrass band to score this movie, in addition to a whole bunch of really interesting, you know, crazy dissonant synthesizer textures and some orchestral moments. But all in all, it was such a fun experience. You know, I think it comes through both in the film and both on the album as well, that when you're listening to the music and you're like, okay, this is a standard horror, you know, music. I hear all the dissonant orchestral crunching and the big bass drums, and then suddenly that'll just disappear, and you'll just hear this, like, banjo bluegrass music for 30 seconds, and then it goes back into scary music. And I mean, to me, it's like the album is it's funny. I mean, it's fun and it's energetic, It's very different than the tone of Rest Stop, which was very dark and somber. And there's literally not a single cue like that on Wrong Turn 2. So, I mean, obviously, I think it's, you know, that sort of music is an acquired taste. But I had a blast. I had a blast on that film. Mm-hmm. So and the record turned out really good too.
Well, I can just tell from the pictures on the. In the CD, especially the guitar jump that you were doing off the, I think it was off a couch or whatever.
Yep.
You looked like you really had a good time. Does that help? Does it help
absolutely does. I mean, it absolutely does. Especially when you're working with somebody like Joe, who when you realize you're on the same page with somebody, then you feel free to experiment. And this is something that is very different than my experience on Battlestar Galactica, because I don't have a really close relationship with the producers, just because they have so many other tasks they have to do, mm-hmm. and basically they trust me to do my thing. So I don't really end up talking with them that much anymore. I mean, I talk with Ron when I have a very specific task, like doing All Along the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. But working with Joe was a really hands-on experience, and he was really open to all my crazy ideas. And I mean, just the fact that I said, hey, let me score your horror movie with a bluegrass band, and he didn't fire me automatically, this is a good sign, you know?
Okay, well, recently you did another one of your live concerts for Halloween with members of Oingo Boingo. How did that turn out this year?
Oh, it was fantastic. Every year gets better and better. This was easily our best set of concerts yet. And we had these venues packed with screaming, crazy Boingo fans. It was a blast. It was just a blast. We hope to do it again next year.
Mm-hmm. So now, what? I mean, obviously, for those that may not be that familiar with Oingo Boingo, Danny Elfman came out of that group. Is there any? Have you been able to maybe get him to return?
Oh, Danny won't ever return.
He won't.
And it's fine. No, he won't.
Okay.
That's the reason that I think everybody else really wanted to play play a show a year, is just to play in front of an audience again, just because the band definitely is not going to reunite. So I just think it's something that Danny doesn't want to do anymore, and more power to him. I mean, those guys toured for 20 years as mm-hmm. as the rock band, and Danny's doing what he wants to do now, you know. So it's not something that I think most Boingo fans know not to hold their breath for any kind of big reunion show. You know, conversely, that means that these Halloween shows that we do, where it's basically the rest of the band plus me and my brother mm-hmm. and some strings, that's the closest you're going to get. You know, and these guys, it's like they haven't lost a thing. I mean, playing with these guys is amazing. These songs come back immediately. And my brother he does all the lead vocals, and he's phenomenal. I mean, he's just phenomenal. The crowds do not walk away, you know, disappointed that Danny's not there. I mean, I just think that they love seeing a Boingo concert. Because mm-hmm. it really does feel like a Boingo concert when you go. It doesn't feel like you're watching a cover band or something. I mean, it feels like, you know, the energy's there, and you've got all those guys up on stage. So it's a pretty awesome experience. I, you know, have been a Boingo fan my whole life, so mm-hmm. for me to even be in the room while they do this, much less to be on stage and be the one that did all the charts and I'm conducting everybody, I mean, it's pretty awesome, you know, truly, truly amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have one more section of the interview in just a bit, but here's some music from Rest Stop, followed up by Wrong Turn 2.
My mind, shades of visions, fading photographs of you, of me, blurred black and white as they flicker past. I silently I wait, strange, passively observe the past returns and till better days. For all that remains are one by one without a trace. They fade away, bittersweet after day. Is all that remains, and every time the more I've lost, the less I've gained. Now
thank you. Once a wayward soul, just like you, my son. Done my share of sinning, and I done it just for fun. One day I passed out, I drank too much Jim Beam. To my surprise, the Lord materialized and said my dream. He gave me a second chance to prove my mortal worth. Promised me a heaven if I did his work on earth. Tears came a-raining, I fell down to my knees. I swear to you, I swore to him eternal loyalty. He will be my shepherd, he will guide me through the night. Bread and peace and joy as if with a butternut. Strength for every day. In my heart I feel his glorious embrace. Oh, the good Lord,
good Lord,
take me from this life of sin,
life of sin.
Oh, the good Lord,
good Lord,
save me at my next of kin,
next of kin.
Oh, the good sweet Lord,
sweet Lord,
that down home salvation to save my soul again. That down home salvation to save my soul again. Good Lord leads his faithful like a shepherd leads his sheep. He knows where he's going, he could find it in his sleep. Takes us directly to them pearly gates. Peter, he's a waiting boy, so don't you be late.
If you ain't a believer, people know it right away.
You can't hide no evil from his soul-piercing gaze. He'll cast you down to heathen California. Believe me, son, you'd rather stay in hell any day.
If you're one of us, you'll have no trouble getting past.
Pearly gates open wide,
then you'll see at last.
Heaven's a dream from which you never woke. No Irish Jews or Catholics, just us decent Christian folk. Oh, the good Lord. Down. down home salvation to save my soul again. That down home salvation to save my soul again. I'm gonna warn you when that day finally arrives. Heathen non-believers will be stranded, left behind. Sinners all from Mobile to Marrakesh, get what you got coming, hellfire burning, searing flesh. Screaming for mercy as you drown in lakes of blood. Bury alive in agony, you claw the mud. Hellhounds are gnawing your bones and chewing through. Rusty razor slice your eyes and spill out all the goo. I'll be watching from my house so heavenly. White suburban middle class angels down my street. Great view below me of your misery. That's the price you pay for not agreeing with me. Oh, the good Lord. Oh, the good Lord,
good Lord,
good Lord, save me and next of kin,
next of kin.
Oh, the good sweet Lord,
sweet Lord,
sweet Lord, sweet Lord, he's about to begin. Bringing that down home salvation to save my soul again. That down home salvation to save my soul.
Wow. What do I say on that one? Hasn't been said. That's really demented, Bear. I'll just say that. Anyway, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. Now, I did promise Wrong Turn 2 in there, but time is slipping away. I do have one more section of the interview to get to, and it's kind of important. So I promise I will play Wrong Turn 2 on a future program, but I just want to get to the last portion of the interview and then some more music from Battlestar Galactica Season 3. So here is the third part of the interview.
Now, you made reference to this a few times during the interview, but now I have to ask you about one of the most interesting aspects of the music for Season 3. And so what was the genesis of the use of All Along the Watchtower?
Well, how much time do we have left? Watchtower is an idea that Ron Moore has been fighting for every season of Battlestar Galactica. From what I understand, the season finale of Season 1, when Baltar is walking through the concert hall with Number 6 in his mind, mm-hmm. they're supposed to be listening to All Along the Watchtower.
Oh.
And then again in Season 2, I think there was a place where it was supposed to come back. It's something Ron really wanted to do. So I think when he finally came up with the idea, or the writers came up with the idea to have a song trigger events in the season finale of Season 3, I think he finally put his foot down and said, this is it. This is the perfect place to finally get Watchtower. So with that said, the amazing thing is that even though he had his heart set on this piece of music, he did not give me any direction as to what it should sound like. And I just give him immense credit for that, that this is an idea that he really fought for. But at the end of the day, after he fought immensely to not only get the song in the show, but then to get Sci-Fi to license it, that at the end of the day, he turns to me and he goes, yeah, just, you know, do something with it. And I was shocked because I didn't know if he wanted it to sound like the Hendrix version or the Dylan version or, you know, any of the other countless ones. And he said to me, no, just make it sound like Galactica, which was really pretty amazing that he would take this idea that he's so passionate about and give me literally no input. He didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea to set it in this sort of Indian heavy metal Asian taiko drum, you know, style, it was entirely mine. In fact, when I wrote it, I did a demo of it a few months before we would end up ultimately scoring that episode. And I thought to myself, they're going to hate this. But I did it anyway just because I knew I'll always have a version that I, you know, I could say, well, this is what I was hoping it would be. And I just thought I would write the most kick-ass version of this song that I could possibly conceive.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. I mean, everybody loved it. I ultimately made no revisions to it. So the one you hear in the final episode, it, for all intents and purposes, is exactly the one that I came up with on my first pass, which trust me, on this show, that process is pretty rare. There's always a lot of revisions. There's always a lot of back and forth. And so I was really thrilled, you know. I mean, the other thing that makes this weird is that when I wrote that, I didn't know what the episode was about. I didn't know what was happening. I don't read the scripts because I don't like to have the episodes spoiled for me, so I like to watch them for the first time when I see them. So all I knew was that they needed a version of All on the Watchtower. So you can imagine that, you know, I had no idea what it could possibly mean.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I came up with. And when I sent it on to Ron, he said, wow, I can totally picture the events happening on screen to this music. And because I didn't know there would be, like, a space battle involved or big reveals or anything. I just wrote a Battlestar version of All Along the Watchtower.
Mm-hmm. Now, there were musical hints that were kind of dropped during some of the earlier episodes, or at least one of the earlier episodes.
Yeah.
How did you do that without giving the whole thing away?
Well, it was pretty easy, honestly, because if you take away the lyrics, there's nothing in the music that I arranged that is still Bob Dylan's. I mean, the song is very simple. It's C-sharp minor chord followed by an A major chord,
mm-hmm.
looped endlessly, and a harmonica solo. And even that doesn't have any melodic hooks. So really, if you take out the lyrics, it could be mistaken for any other song. Adding confusion to that, I wrote two original guitar riffs that are actually just my original compositions to the song. Mm-hmm. So when you're actually hearing these guitar lines, there's no reason in the world to think that it's All Along the Watchtower. It's only at the very end when the lyrics come in and his vocal melody comes in that you realize, oh my gosh, this is All Along the Watchtower. So it made that trick really easy because they could hear any part of the song and there'd be no reason to even suspect what it is until the characters start quoting the verses.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know this. I know this story because I read it in your blog, but there was something that happened on the mix for the episode where it features All Along the Watchtower where the was so loud that they couldn't...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, as a composer, you know, I go to the dubs just to make sure that all the producers are happy.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it's also an exercise in humility because basically you watch your music get mixed so low that you can't hear it, and then most of the time the producer will say, I need to hear that line, or that explosion's got to be bigger. So it's always a matter of the music becoming even softer, and it's... You know, it's painful. I'm not going to say you ever get over it, but it's what the show needs to do to be a good show. So imagine my surprise when, in the scene where the first real clear version of... It wasn't actually even All Along the Watchtower. It was a cue that I had written based on my original riffs that leads into All Along the Watchtower, but it's a climactic scene and a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
When that cue came up, the producer said, no, make that music even louder. Make it louder. Raise the guitars. I want to hear more of that rock and roll drums. We played it back, raised it louder, and he says, I want more. Can you get it even louder? The dubber looks at the needles, and he says, no, you can't. The music is so loud that it's actually, you can't get it any louder and still be, you know, legal for broadcast. I mean, my jaw hit the floor because my music had never done that before.
Well, that's amazing. So now, have you heard any feedback from Bob Dylan?
I haven't. His CD is going out in the mail tomorrow. I'm sending him a copy, and I doubt I'll ever hear anything from him. It would be just to know he even knows that it exists would be an honor. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, now coming in this weekend up here in Canada, anyway, BSG Razor is premiering.
Yes.
You wrote the music for that, obviously. Did you take the music in any different directions, or did you just keep it in the Battlestar Galactica standard universe?
Well, it's certainly in what is, you know, what I would call the Battlestar standard universe. There's nothing in the episode that is that outside the box for us. I think, You know, interestingly enough, the we were talking about earlier about the episode Pegasus, mm-hmm. which there were not only some orchestral decisions made, but a lot of weird musical decisions were made in that episode. So I was hoping or considering that because this is the backstory of the Pegasus, that we would be hearing the return of those themes. But in fact, that doesn't happen, and the main reason that doesn't happen is that Razor isn't really about the Pegasus. It just takes place on the Pegasus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about a new character named Kendra Shaw. And ultimately, everything we learn about Admiral Kane and about the Pegasus, we learn through her eyes. So really, it's truly not about the backstory of the Pegasus. It's about the development and growth of Kendra Shaw. So I had to write her a theme. And because she's never appeared on the show before, it's obviously a new theme. You know, you'll hear that a lot throughout the development of Razor. There's also a recurring moment of, I'm trying to decide if I should spoil it. I can't remember if it's already out on those sci-fi featurettes or not. But there is a
Don't worry
a
about spoiling it then. If there's a fear of spoiling it, don't do that.
Well, then there is another theme that comes back in the DVD version of Razor, and I don't think the sci-fi version. There's another theme that comes back that will make all the fans very happy.
Now, which kind of leads me to maybe revealing this. There are flashbacks to the first Cylon War.
Yes.
Did you take that opportunity to pay any homage to the original series?
I will just say yes.
Now, obviously, you've started Season 4's music. So how is the writer's strike affecting you?
Oh, it's affecting us a lot. I mean, it's affecting everybody. I think we are actually among the luckiest shows. Of most people that I know that work in TV are basically out of work by Christmas, and in post-production, I should say. And Battlestar, we have 10 episodes to produce, possibly even 11. So what that means is we are on schedule to deliver an April premiere and run 10 shows. Of course, the problem, I think fans were a little concerned when they learned that it was possible that Sci-Fi Channel wasn't going to run a full run of 20 shows in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with the strike, I think, you know, fans can obviously count on the fact that they're only going to get 10 episodes of Battlestar. And if the strike were to end very soon, then those remaining 10 could, in theory, be ready for the fall. But, I'm not involved with the production planning, but my gut instinct is that because of the strike, you're not going to see the last 10 episodes until 2009.
Wow.
It's probably going to be, this is something that Sci-Fi Channel was considering doing anyway, and the strike is making it impossible to do anything else. I just finished watching the first run of 10. It's amazing. It is really amazing. I mean, easily the best run of shows that this series has done yet, and it's going to be frustrating for everybody. I mean, not just the fans, all of us that work on the show, to have these delays built in. But it'll be worth the wait. It'll be worth the wait. I mean, those scripts really are incredible, and I really feel for those writers. They deserve everything that they're standing for, and this show wouldn't be good without them. So I know that, you know, everybody in post and actors, you know, we all support them very much.
All right. Well, now, in the liner notes of Season 3, you make mention that Season 4 will, in fact, be the final season of Battlestar Galactica. So what does the future hold for you after Battlestar Galactica?
I have a lot on my plate still. I mean, I'm doing the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is the Terminator series.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's on Fox, and it's a premiere show, so we don't know if I'll be working on it, you know, beyond February or March, but I have a very good feeling about it. I am enjoying working on it as much as I enjoy working on Battlestar, and I think it's an incredible series, especially for network television. I mean, I think it's really a remarkable show. So with any luck, I hope to be working on that for a while. And also, you know, there's the possibility that I'll return to Eureka for Season 3, although the strike, you know, is pushing third season of Eureka into the distant future. I'm just keeping my energy focused on finishing Battlestar right now.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of offers I've had to turn down the past year. I've certainly not been struggling looking for stuff to do, and right now I'm just focusing on giving the final season of Battlestar the music it deserves and really making sure that it's incredible, because I do know that it'll be a long time before I work on a show as good as Battlestar again. I mean, I don't know how many shows there are out there that are as good as Battlestar, so I'm really just trying to savor every episode, every cue, every scene that I write, and give it my best, and basically, you know, focusing on the future after that, after it's done.
All right. Well, I really appreciate the time that you've given me today. Is there going to be a release for Battlestar Galactica Razor? Is there any talk of that yet?
A soundtrack release?
A soundtrack, sorry. Yes.
You know, there has been, and I think ultimately my decision is going to be to include a couple of cues on the upcoming season 4 record. Frankly, it just wouldn't make a really good album. I mean, there are a couple of really great cues, probably more than a couple, probably 4 or 5 that are really outstanding, and then a lot of underscore that I think just doesn't make for an incredible album. And what I'm going to do in the long run, once season 4 ends, I'm going to put together a multi-disc collection of cues that didn't make it on any of the records. So I'm going to go back to even season 1 and put out everything that everybody wants to hear that hasn't made the cut. Mm-hmm. And at that point also, I might even just include the complete Razor score, as well as a couple other episodes, you know, just the complete score for the true Battlestar Galactica fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, because the way I put together these records so that they're very accessible to everybody, you know, and they're very listenable, and I make them like albums. But I know that there's people out there that want to have just every cue, and that's something that I do want to, you know, release in the long run. So that'll probably be 2009. You know, by the time I'm done, I've got to finish season 4 and then do the season 4 record. Also, as long as you're talking about upcoming projects, next March I'm going to be releasing my music from Eureka, which will actually be very fun. It's like Cajun Zydeco accordion music meets really weird 80s new wave music meets blues and bluegrass. It's really weird. Really weird stuff.
Is
and
that,
night and day.
Is that
different
a La La
than
Land release?
It'll be La La Land, yeah.
Cool. All right then. Well, thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob.
We shall talk to you later then.
You got it.
Okay.
Thanks, Bear, for the interview. It was just fantastic. Anyway, if you're interested in any of the film, television, or video game music that I do play here on Visions and Sound, you can contact me here at the station at 884-CKMS. That's 884-2567. You can also try me online at visionsinsound2000@hotmail.com. We're getting very close to the end of the program, but if you're interested also in finding where the music from Battlestar Galactica, the new series, can be, you can go on to La La Land Records website. That's lalalandrecords.com, and you can get all, including the mini series, seasons 1, 2, and 3, and 3 is, like I said, just come out, so get out there and, you know, make some Battlestar Galactica fan happy this Christmas. So I'm going to end off with some more music from season 3, also with the All Along the Watchtower version. It's a fantastic version. So I'm just going to let it speak for itself. But first of all, here's a little bit of a lead up to it. It's called Heeding the Call. I'll be back next week with more Visions in Sound.
must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.